Hi, this is Chris Bowen, and welcome to the screencast, Tales from the Webside. It's a recording of a session that I gave as part of our Northeast MSDN Roadshow series in December of 2009, and it's a look at the current state of development for ASP.NET web forms development, including a look at JavaScript and Ajax. And then we'll end the screencast by looking forward to what's coming with ASP.NET 4. You can reach out to me with any questions to cbowen@microsoft.com and my blog or Twitter. ASP.NET includes a variety of technologies to help you create applications for the web. The first of which is ASP.NET Web Forms, and we'll be talking about this in detail in this screencast, and also the second item, the Microsoft Ajax Library, and some related tools and techniques that you can use for creating web applications. ASP.NET MVC will help you to create applications that are built on the core of ASP.NET's functionality, but implement the Model View Controller design pattern. And this can help you to achieve several benefits, including things like separation of concerns, testability, and also flexibility in the implementation that you choose. To learn more, go to asp.net/mvc. And the last on this list is dynamic data. This will help you to create websites based on databases that you may wish to expose to the web. And so you could use Link to SQL, Entity Framework, point to tables that you have, and let dynamic data create web pages for you automatically that will show and let users work with that data. It also uses templates that you can use to modify the exact outputs being created for you. To learn more about that, go to asp.net/dynamic data. So let's dive in and do a brief demo of a basic ASP.NET Web Forms application. I want to show you some things that ASP.NET is doing for you to make development easier, and also point out some things that we'll return to as topics when we look forward to what's coming in ASP.NET 4. So let's go into Visual Studio and begin a project. So we'll say File, New Project, and on the left-hand side we'll choose the Web tab, and then on the right-hand side a Web Application. We'll just leave the name as default. That looks great. Say OK. This will generate for us a web config file, and also a default page that we can go ahead and begin to add content to. Now, this default view is the source view. It's showing us the HTML that will be used to send down, that will be sent down to the client for the browser to render, along with some server-side content that we can also add, including the page directive tag up here, which won't be sent down directly, but will help to create the page. Now, we can go through and add content here, or we can go through other views as well. There's a design service, which will show us what the page would look like if rendered now. There's nothing on it, so it's essentially a blank screen right now. I can also go into split view, which will show me both the source and that design preview. It's from here that we'll do some work. So let's begin. I actually want to add some content to the page fairly quickly. So I'm going to go to the Server Explorer and open up one of my databases. I have the Northwind sample database installed on SQL Express. And I can open up one of these tables, and it's a fairly common thing to do in demonstrations, but I want to just get some data and some content fairly quickly. So I'm dragging and dropping a table, products, from my database onto the design surface here, and I'm going to let it go. And Visual Studio will take care of wiring up a SQL data source, which will connect up select and all kinds of other interactions with that table, and also adds a grid view to the page as well, also automatically associated with each of the column names that are in that table that I selected. Now I can go through and choose some of the grid view tasks. You can make it look pretty if you want. Sure, sand and sky looks great. And we'll go ahead and say OK. And we can also, you can access that by clicking this little arrow on the right-hand side. Let's go in and turn on these other features. We want to turn on paging and sorting, editing, deleting, and selection of items. That looks great, and that's almost good enough for us to run this. I want to show you that you can also add controls onto the page, and this relates to making it more familiar to people that are coming from, say, a WinForms-based background where they're developing applications for Windows, but they're used to a design surface. They want to be able to drag and drop buttons. That's what ASP.NET offers us as well. So I can click, drag and drop, and this probably is good enough. Let's also put a label on the page too. So taking a label control, dragging and dropping it there. And we'll come back to what these tasks mean in just a little while, but I'm going to double click on the button itself, and this will give me, just like we're used to with WinForms development, a event that we can plug into, an event that we can plug into and write some code. This will execute on the server side as a result of the event happening, this case on the client side. So we can actually write some code here. I'll say label one, text. We want to update this to say it was clicked. Clicked at, say, plus, and if I can type right, we'll get this done. We'll say date time now, and we'll do to a short time string. Okay, now that's enough for us to run this, and I'm going to go ahead and do that now. It's going to ask us first if we want to turn on debugging, in which case it's going to automatically modify the web config for us, and I do, so I'll say yes, or okay. It's going to fire up our ASP.NET development server on our local machine, and it's going to send the page down to the browser, in this case, IE. And you can see the page here. So we have our products table listed for us, the first page of content, and you can go through, you can work with each of these, you can select an item, it'll select it for you. You can also go down to the button. Now keep in mind, this button was wired up to have a server-side event, but we're on the client side. So ASP.NET provides some abstraction that's built into this page to help make that association between client and server. So when I click this button, there's some logic that tells the page to post itself back to the server. The server gets the page, determines that the button was clicked, and then runs that code that we have in the page, in the code behind, that is in response to that server-side event that we had written. So I'm going to click the button now. I want you to watch carefully. I'm not sure this will appear very well in the screencast, but the whole page will flicker as I click the button. I'm going to do it now. Here's the click. And I'm not sure if you can see that. Probably wasn't very pronounced, but the whole page did refresh and repainted, and we saw at the very bottom here, you see at the bottom here, it says clicked at 4:21 p.m. So that's the conclusion of that process, the server side responding, sending a whole page back. Even though only that text changed, it seems fairly wasteful to have to send the whole page both back and forth from the server if only that one thing needs to change. And that's one of the things that you can get as a benefit by using something called AJAX, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. So keep that in mind as something that we can optimize from a usability perspective and also from a performance perspective, that we can send less across the web, and there'll be less impact, less delay, fewer reminders to the user that they're on a web application versus an installed application, which really, as a web developer, should be our goal. We want to make it feel like an installed app, even though it's deployed through a web application. But at this point, I want to show you the source behind this page. What was the actual content sent down by the server that the web browser is receiving and should render? So here's the view source. And so the first thing I'm sure that pops out to you is this big block of text that's at line 14. This is view state. And view state is one of the mechanisms that ASP.NET uses to establish an event-driven paradigm for developers on top of what is normally a stateless web environment. View state contains the content and state of the page at a given time, including controls, text boxes, things like that. And the reason why it exists is it helps the page on the server side to regenerate quickly and to respond to what's happened on the client side. For example, you might have the current contents of a text box be part of view state sent down to the client, and when you change that text box on the client side, the view state will be sent back up along with that new value that you've submitted as part of that form post. The server side gets that, looks at the value that you've supplied, and then compares that to the value in view state. And it says, oh, this has changed. Let me fire off an on-update event for that text box if there is any code associated with that. And that's how you can get events driven by client-side interaction. Now, this doesn't come without an expense, and so this can get fairly large, in fact very large, for certain applications, and it's something you want to monitor. If there are areas or entire pages that don't use the functionality that ViewState provides, maybe it's read-only, then you can go ahead and turn off ViewState, and it's highly recommended that you do that because you'll optimize both the download and postback of that page. It'll save you time, it'll save you bandwidth, and it'll also help the page be more responsive to the user, download more quickly, and you'll just have an overall more satisfying application. So there are ways to turn that off in ASP 3.5. There are more ways coming in ASP 4, some more flexibility that will offer you different scenarios that you can support. For now, let's table this, and let's scroll down to the bottom and show you here we're inside the grid that was showing products. And what I want to point out to you is right here, and let me zoom in. Within each of these rows, within the table, there are various controls and items, and each of them is assigned an ID. And here we see Grid View 1, CTL05, CTL03, and this is a way that ASP.NET uses to uniquely identify the components that it generates as part of creating the page for you. Now we can use this ID to react to and work with that particular control. However, because it's generated, it may not always be the easiest thing to anticipate or for you to write code against. So you have to write some kind of mechanic to figure out, oh, this is actually what that control is going to be called. There are some ways to help mitigate that currently, but it's also one of those other things that's going to be improved with ASP.NET 4, and we'll talk about that in just a little while. So at this point, I'd like to close the view source, and actually we'll stop running the application and go back to the page. So here's our design split view. I'm actually going to go and update the grid here. We don't need all these features here. I'll turn off paging, selecting, deleting, editing, sorting, and just leave it blank. We want just show us the data. It's read-only. We don't need any other functionality. So we're not going to be editing this. Let's see what that impact is on view state, though. I'm going to run this page again. Okay, we've turned off all the editing capabilities, the selecting, and all that. This is purely a read-only list. I'm going to right-click now, and we'll go to view source. Okay. Now you can see it's actually had quite an impact to view state. It's huge at this point. And it's something you got to keep in mind because we're not taking advantage of view state in this particular page because we're not updating the contents. We're not going to be going through this grid and editing contents, maybe changing fields and values and resubmitting them to the page, which would then compare values and figure out if something changed. So this is a prime example of a case where you'd want to turn view state off. And you can do that at the page level, at the control level, and I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail when I talk about ASP.NET 4, but just keep this in mind. Even though you've made something into a read-only usage, it doesn't necessarily mean you've gotten rid of view state. So at this point, let's close the application and return to slides. The next topic is scripting and AJAX. And again, the point for usability as a web developer should be to have your web application feel as much like a native installed Windows application as possible. And to do that, you really want to enhance the client-side functionality that you're offering. And we can do that by using JavaScript, JavaScript libraries, and AJAX. So the ASP.NET AJAX library, I'll talk in detail about, is really an offering that brings AJAX, which is asynchronous JavaScript and XML, to you as a library of functions that you can just take advantage of. I'll talk about that in detail in a moment. JavaScript debugging and IntelliSense have really been improved from Visual Studio in 2005 and also again in Visual Studio 2008. I'll go through a demonstration and I'll show you some of that functionality, but JavaScript is the standard language that the majority of browsers out there understand and can work with to execute logic on the client side within the web browser. Finally, jQuery is a library of JavaScript functionality that's available to you, again, offering more functionality just out of the box that you can take advantage of. I'll talk about what that can do for you, how you can get it, and also how it integrates within Visual Studio in just a moment. A good way to add AJAX functionality is with the ASP.NET AJAX library. Available from ASP.NET/AJAX in beta form, it now includes the AJAX control toolkit, which I'll demo and talk about in just a minute. Also, this is open source. It's part of a newly formed CodePlex Foundation, which allows it to now accept community contributions. Also, it will be supported when it's released, so you can call Microsoft and get support for working with any part of the ASP.NET AJAX library. And FYI, jQuery is already supported, so if you are looking to use jQuery, have a question about it, have maybe a problem you're trying to work through using it, you can call up Microsoft or use an incident, and they'll be happy to walk you through and give you some support for that. Also, Content Delivery Network is a new option for you. It's free use of our servers that we use to host the ASP.NET AJAX library and resources, and also jQuery. And you can point to our servers, a very simple URL that you just update in your page. And the advantage of this will be that, you know, we'll foot the bill for hosting and for the throughput, the bandwidth, and downloading all the content. It's a performance thing as well. So we have many data centers spread out across the world, and maybe we have one that's closer to the customer that's using your website, and so it's going to help with getting those bits down as fast as possible. Also, most major browsers these days will cache content, and that includes JavaScript files. So if another website is using the CDN, and that user comes to your website, and you're also using the CDN, the web browser can say, oh, I've already got this AJAX library downloaded. I don't think I need it again, so let's just go ahead and use it. And that's going to save that customer the time to have to go and download that additional set of scripts as well, thus bringing your page up and letting it be useful more quickly. A little bit more about the ASP.NET AJAX library. There are new options for accessing data from the client side, and in particular, you can access any JSON endpoint or JavaScript object notation. And there's a wide variety of sites and technologies that offer and can work with JSON data, including what you see here. I'll mention WCF Data Services is formerly what was known formerly as ADO.NET Data Services, and there's plenty of other technologies as well that will let you export data in a JSON format. You can work with that, pull down the data to the client side, and then use another new feature called client templates. And that will help you defer the choice of how you format and present data all the way down to the client side. And that will increase flexibility, letting the server side focus just on the data. Also, I mentioned before the AJAX Control Toolkit is now part of the ASP.NET AJAX library, and there's upwards of about 40 or so controls that will help you to make adding AJAX functionality that much more easy. And you can use all those controls within ASP.NET web forms. You can use most of the controls with other technologies like ASP.NET MVC and so forth and so on. Also, there is new integration options for using jQuery, which I'll show in a little bit, some more about jQuery. But the idea behind jQuery is that you can use functionality, something called selectors, and you can basically select items on your page, controls, hyperlinks, div tags, whatever you need, and be able to apply actions and functionality to that selected set of controls. It's a very powerful feature of jQuery, and ASP.NET AJAX library integrates with that. So for example, you could select a particular text box very easily using a jQuery selector, and then just say .calendar, and then that will tell the ASP.NET AJAX library to instantiate one of the calendar control extenders and then attach that functionality to that target control that you selected using jQuery. So a bit more about client templates. The first example is a very basic idea of how you might do server-side data binding. With an item template, you then say for each record in this result set, evaluate out the name field and insert it into a new list item. That will generate code on the server side, or HTML on the server side, that will then be emitted down to the client. Client templates, the bottom example, takes a different approach. We focus more on HTML that we then add the class of sys-template to, which indicates that we can use this on the client side as the recipient or the target of a set of data that you want to associate. And so in this case, we say the name field that we have in whatever data set's been bound to us, I can escape that with double braces, and say for each name field within this result set, add a list item. And that's going to generate much the same kind of content. The benefit is that this is dynamic and client-driven. So, for example, you might have a page that by default shows a summary view, and the user of your site may want to see more details. So you could offer them a chance to switch the view. They can switch to a different template, maybe just a simple drop-down or a button. And then you just, as a developer, put in a little bit of client-side logic that switches out the template and says, take the same data, use this template instead, to show the contents, maybe in different ways, pulling out more fields from the same data source. And that will create the right representation on the client side without having to go and have a whole new page generated on the server side. Just a few words about the AJAX Control Toolkit. I had already mentioned this is now part of the ASP.NET AJAX library, so if you download that, you're going to get the AJAX Control Toolkit included automatically. There is a URL to go directly to the AJAX Control Toolkit. It's there at the bottom of the screen. That's more for if you want to download the old prior versions of this, you can go there. But I wanted to point out the picture that you see on the screen here is a screenshot of a Visual Studio solution that you'll get as part of that download. You can run this, and it's a really helpful way to go through each of the controls, see them in action, see some documentation and descriptions, and get a good feel for the options that you have with the AJAX Control Toolkit. The nice thing about this as well is that it's a living document. You could modify this maybe as you make changes or add your own AJAX-oriented controls. You could then use this as a shared team resource that could then include not only the standard controls, but any others that you've incorporated from yours or from community sources into that. I definitely recommend that you at least check that out and work through each of the different controls to understand what they can do for you. So at this point, I'd like to do a demonstration. There's a lot to show. I wanted to go back into that other example that we were working on to begin with, and then go through a wide variety of things, from AJAX to jQuery and JavaScript, and also show you a little bit about how you can use some developer tools in IE8 to work with these new features. So we didn't spend much time on this, but I very briefly introduced the way of using web forms and the toolbox to drag and drop some controls from here onto the design surface to get a very basic server-generated page that is then sent down to the browser. Now we want to focus on using client-side technology to improve the usability and functionality on that side independently of having to go back to the server for a new page. And to do that, we can use JavaScript. And so I'm going to go into the source view here. And oftentimes you'll put functions for JavaScript in the head part of the HTML document, just a localized place that can be called from other parts of the page. And I can just start typing. I'll get help with IntelliSense, so I can say script, and the type of the script will be equal to JavaScript. And I'll close that out. It'll give me a close tag there. And now you can just start writing JavaScript functionality. In fact, if you just start writing a function, you'll see there's IntelliSense for that as well. That was added as part of Visual Studio 2008, and it's really helpful as you're writing JavaScript functionality. So I say function do script, and I won't pass any arguments in. Open up the curly braces, and then start writing some code. So in here, again, you can get IntelliSense, start saying var x equals 10. In fact, you could do x dot. You'll see that Visual Studio offers you contextual IntelliSense, even though JavaScript isn't necessarily, it's not a strongly typed language. So you see here I just said var x is a sandbox. It's basically, I can put something into this variable, but I'm not saying what it is. IntelliSense here, Visual Studio here, was smart enough to say, well, how was x used before? It looks like it's a number. So let me offer you numeric-oriented functionality as part of the IntelliSense for this here. And so you can use these, say, that sounds great, call it, and do all of that. That's fine, not terribly interesting to demo for you right now. So I want to show you the next step up, and I want to use the functionality of the ASP.NET AJAX library. Now to do that, we need to add a little bit of, we need to add references to the library, and one of the best ways, the easiest ways to do that, is to use the script manager. And so I can find that in the toolbox, if I can do this right. We'll scroll down here toward AJAX extensions at the bottom here. You'll see these when you install Visual Studio 2008, and the thing we want to use is Script Manager. As its name implies, it helps us to deal with the scripts that our page would be using. It also goes beyond that. It can help access endpoints, services, and things like that. But for now, we're going to focus on just using that. I want to get to the point where I want to put it in, which will be right after the form tag. Let's go back to the toolbox, and I'm going to drag and drop that right underneath that. So you can see I can drag and drop right into the source view as well. Now that I have the script manager, the page has enough knowledge to say, okay, I understand how I need the script manager. The script manager takes care of the AJAX wiring. So now I can go back up to this doScript function and start writing something. I say, you know, var results is equal to, and then just say sys dot. Now, that sys dot was the first part of, it's actually the indicator of it using a namespace within the ASP.NET AJAX library. And so now you see that there's a bunch of other namespaces and methods and classes that I can call within that particular namespace. So here, There's even our friend the String Builder from regular .NET programming. Web forms, UI, serialization, net calls, all kinds of stuff are in here. And the naming is not coincidental. It's supposed to be more familiar for you if you're coming from the .NET world, that many of those things that you're used to in .NET will make an appearance here, so you don't have to relearn how to work with them or where they're going to live. You know, sys.debug might be helpful for those things. In my case, I want to go and use sys.browser. And so you can see here we get full IntelliSense, even for the functionality within the ASP.NET AJAX library. So here I can see within the browser namespace, I want to get the version of the browser that's being used to view this page. So we can store that into the results, and I can just do something as simple as alerting this, and we'll say your version equals and plus result, and just go ahead and put that out to the screen. That's all well and good. I'll run this for you in a little bit, but we need something to invoke that. And to do that, I'm going to add an extra couple buttons to the bottom of the screen. These are going to be purely client-side buttons, so I'm going to use them from a different section of the toolbox. Before, I had used a button from the standard ones here, and that's good if you want to have server availability for that, so you can either update it or work with it from the server side. In this case, we just want the HTML. So I'm going to go to the HTML section and expand this out, and you can see we have some straight HTML controls here, and I'm going to drag and drop those onto the page. I want two buttons, and so I'll say input button. I'm going to drag it down onto the page. Let me synchronize here. Synchronize the views, and I can drag and drop this now over there. And pull down the button. There's one button. I probably should have just pinned the window. But here we go, two buttons. I'm going to rename this one. In fact, I can just do it right in the HTML. So let's call this one here. Change the value. Let's call this one script. And then the next one, right after that, we'll call this one use jQuery. And so in order to have the buttons call a script, I need to put in an event within the markup for that button. So here I can just say, whenever this button is clicked, I want to say, let's do something. So onClick is going to be equal to the name of that function that I wrote before, which I believe was called doScript. So we'll type that in there, and that should be good enough. I'm going to synchronize the views from the source to the preview down here, and you can see we have script and use jQuery now. And I'm going to come back to jQuery in just a little bit, but this is enough for us to go ahead and run. So running this now will show us the same screen as before, and now we'll see the buttons at the bottom, the use jQuery button, which we'll get to in just a second, but also the script button, and I'll click that, and you'll see we get an alert with version equals 8, as we expected. And I could have set a breakpoint in the code right in my page there, and Visual Studio would have been smart enough to figure out how to send a breakpoint down and let us step through our client-side code just the same as we would with .NET logic. And it's very easy for you to do. Just go ahead to that line, set a breakpoint, and then you can step through it. But now, let's go ahead and close this and turn our attention back to the jQuery button. And so the jQuery button isn't wired up to any function yet. So I'm going to go back up to the top of the page, again to the head part of the document. And let's go ahead and add in a function here. So I'll say function do jQuery. And we'll go ahead and add that in. And this time, though, I haven't actually told the page about jQuery yet. So this is where you need to go and download the jQuery JavaScript files, so you can actually work with jQuery. You can do that at jQuery.com, and I'm going to show you version 1.3.2. However, as of this recording, 1.4 was just released, so you can go and take a look at that version as well. So go to that site, jQuery.com, and download what you need, including the Visual Studio IntelliSense file. It's a VS doc file, which I'll talk about in just a second. So now let's just go ahead and add a scripts directory here. So I'm going to say add new folder. And we'll call this script. So I'm going to add the script files to this by saying open folder. And we'll pin this to the right. I already have my jQuery files downloaded in this directory. So I'm going to copy these over. And so you'll have them locally within your project. Now to actually have them as part of your project, you want to include them. So we'll say add existing item. And we'll go out to those three files and add them in. Now, what are they? We've added three files. The second one in the list there, 1.3.2.js, is the actual functionality of Java of jQuery. It's all in there. All the functions that we'll want to call and functionality we want to take advantage of is there. The next one below that, or the last one on the list, is what's called the minified version. And that has extra space stripped out, documentation removed, things that aren't important when you're not debugging. And so actually it can streamline the actual contents that is being sent down to the browser. So it's smaller, takes less time to download. However, you wouldn't want to debug with that version. You want to debug with the one above it because it's going to be more... it's going to be easier to set breakpoints and step through and kind of read documentation and stuff like that. The very top one is for Visual Studio to use to present you with IntelliSense when you're working with JavaScript. Now, if you're in Visual Studio 2008 and trying to get this to work, you need to do one extra thing to have Visual Studio work with this. First of all, you need to have Visual Studio 2008 with SP1 installed, and then there's a hotfix that you would apply. And that is described in a number of blog posts. You can search Scott Guthrie's blog and just search for jQuery IntelliSense, and you'll find this. But the actual file that you need is from a knowledge base article, 958502. And it's a very small change. It just says to Visual Studio, whenever you see a .js file, it's going to look for something named that name with -vs-doc. And if it can find that file, it's going to use that. It's going to parse it and try to find IntelliSense support that it can then offer to you within Visual Studio. So I've already done that. So now Visual Studio understands that I have jQuery. I have jQuery IntelliSense enabled. I just need to tell the page that I want to use jQuery. Now you can do this a few different ways. You can actually just drag and drop the file over onto your page, and that will generate a script tag for you. I also wanted to show you how to do this with the script manager. If you go down here to where that script manager control is that we included earlier, we can actually add a new scripts node to this. And within this, you say add a script reference. We'll say path equals, and this will help you to pick a URL. Just select that and say, let's go and find the script that we want. I want to use jQuery132.js. We'll add that in, and don't forget to close the tag. Otherwise, bad things happen. So, there we go. We've got that closed. And now, we should have access to jQuery. So if we go up here, I should be able to just start writing jQuery. So let me save this first, just to make sure. And it's $, and then open paren. You can see here, I've got IntelliSense. It's telling me, oh, it looks like you're doing jQuery. Here's some help for you. Here's how to write a selector. And some help with the parameters and the definition of the method as well. So I can go ahead and write a selector. So selectors use a standard syntax that you can use, and basically it says identify elements on a page that you want, and in our case we could say pick all the anchor tags, which would be all the hyperlinks on your page, select those, and then hit dot, and you'll see full IntelliSense for not only jQuery, but also any other AJAX or script functionality that I would want to apply to that one or zero to many matching parts of the page. So I could do whatever I want to. I could hide things. So actually, let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to say something a little more detailed. In fact, I can say things like this. Find things that are within a table that are table rows. So TR is the tag for a row within a table, which we have because we have a grid that's been dropped onto the page down there, you can see below. I'm saying take all the rows from that table. Strictly, I don't need to say table because the only rows I have are within a table here, but pick all those table rows, and then we can do something with that. So I can just say maybe slide toggle. And then even within this, we get IntelliSense. How fast do you want the toggle, the sliding to happen? Do you want a callback to be called when this happens? And I'll say, no, this is all fine. Use that. You can also get even more advanced. So you could say, I want all the rows within tables, but I also, maybe I just want the even rows. And so with this little bit of syntax, I've said quite a bit. And the important thing to note about jQuery is that they've done the work of making sure that this will work with all the major recent versions of different families of browsers out there. So think about how you might do this with straight JavaScript, and then kind of just enjoy the fact that jQuery does this for you. It's a lot of code that is being saved, and then I know this will work with, you know, all the major browsers that are out there, and I don't have to really write a lot of if conditional statements to say if it's this version of the browser, I may have to do it a little bit differently. It's just part of what jQuery does. That gives us a chance now to tie into that, to integrate with that functionality and do other jQuery functions, custom functions, and also things from the ASP.NET AJAX library. So I've got what I need now to call and execute jQuery functionality, but I need to call the function. So what I can do now is update the bottom of the page, which is where we added that client-side button right here. And I'll say onClick is equal to do jQuery. Put that in there. Now I can hit run, and the same page will come up again, only this time we've now wired up that last button on the page to call into jQuery functionality. Now watch when I click this button, all of the dark rows you see here, keep an eye on those, use jQuery, and they've all collapsed away. And that was simply because I did jQuery on the client side. I didn't go back to the server. This is not a new page. And it's executed. In fact, if you take a look at the top here, even the header of the table went away as well, because that was one of the even rows that was selected by the selector that I used. Now, I want to point out here a really good utility, a good tool to use for learning and working with jQuery. If you go to the Tools menu, there's Developer Tools within Internet Explorer 8. You can either click that option or hit F12, and this will bring up the Developer Tools. Now, I have a whole screencast on how to work with these various tools and features, and I'll link to that in the description in this post. But I wanted to focus your attention to the script tag here, script tab. If you go here, on the right-hand side, there's a console window. And we can use this to run script against a local page. So much like I just did within the page itself, the JavaScript within the page, I can run my own jQuery selector here and say, let's repeat it. I'll just, not table, table, and tr. And in fact, it was even. And I can just say, well, slide toggle again. So I can, in fact, redo that syntax. So here, you can see everything came back, and I didn't have to go back to the server. The page didn't reload. In fact, to prove it, I'll just go up, and let's go with the odd rows here. And I'll run the script again. Now you can see the header's intact, and now it's all the evenly ID'd rows, which were the odd rows, remain in the screen here. So I highly recommend that you take a moment, find a good reference or a good book on jQuery, and learn about the selector syntax just by trying it out here. Go through and pick various things. I'm not sure what else we have on the page here. So there's some input fields there. I could do something like this. So select all input tags, and let's just say hide. I like to hide things here. So let's say run the script. And there they go. They've disappeared from the page. The buttons are no longer visible. And we can get those back. There's ways to add, change HTML content, modify the DOM, ways to add AJAX functionality, and all kinds of other stuff with jQuery and combined with the ASP.NET AJAX library. Rather than having to go through the page and hit run and see the effect on the page each time, run the page once and then try a few varieties of commands that you're thinking of, and use the console within the IE8 developer tools to try that out, and I think you'll save a lot of time by doing that. Let's go back to the example. I have one more thing we want to add. So I'd like to add in some functionality from the AJAX Control Toolkit, again, part of the ASP.NET AJAX library. And to do that, I've already gone ahead and added the controls to my toolbox, and there's plenty of documentation of how to do that. So now you can just drag and drop these controls into your forms like you would with any other control within a web form application. But before I do that, let's add a text box to the page, and I can do that really anywhere. Let's just do that up here, and I'll put a text box here. Let's drag and drop one from the standard controls, the top here. And this will just be a normal text box, nothing special about it. However, Visual Studio has detected that we have extender controls that are part of the AJAX Control Toolkit. And extenders are very simply just controls that implement a special interface or a base class that allows them to target another control and add functionality to that control. without you having to subclass the original control to add functionality. So I have a standard text box, and Visual Studio says, you've got some extenders out there that can work with a text box. Would you like to add them? And I'll say, okay, great. And this is going to show me, through the wizard, the controls that are available, and not necessarily just Ajax Control Toolkit controls, but really any ones that would apply, that can apply to a text box. And so here, you see there's a variety of things to choose from. I'm going to pick the calendar extender and just say OK. And what that will do is it will instantiate a new calendar control, and it will wire that up to point at that standard text box. So when I run this, we're going to automatically get that functionality. And so now you can add another extender if you wish, or remove that one. Also, it added references for me. On the right-hand side here, you can see references has now been expanded, and it now includes Ajax Control Toolkit and other things that are necessary to help that run in a WebForms application. So all I did, just add that into the toolbox, drag and drop, or in this case, use the extender wizard to add a control, and now I can run the application again. If I go to that text box, again, I didn't change the functionality of the text box itself. I didn't have to subclass it or change anything. Now if I just click into that field, I get that calendar control extender adding functionality to that text box. So I can go ahead and choose a date, and it's going to go ahead and send that result back to the original target control. And I can use this control. It's very fully featured. You can also modify the appearance using CSS as you wish. And again, it's really a very powerful way to add functionality to existing controls that you don't have to write yourself. Do look at the options that are available to you, because this will just save you time and effort. So we covered a lot of ground in that demonstration. We still only scratched the surface in terms of functionality that each of these areas offers. I want to encourage you to take a look in more detail at that functionality that is in each of these areas, from things like the script loader in ASP.NET Ajax to UI and animation and many more other options in jQuery, and also the other controls and extenders that are part of the Ajax Control Toolkit. It'll be time well spent, because it's just other things that you can take advantage of out of the box without having to write yourself. So I'd like to conclude this screencast by taking a look at what's coming for WebForms development in ASP.NET 4. Many of the improvements are related to helping search engine optimization, or SEO, and developer productivity. Here's a short list of the improvements, from URL routing to permanent redirects and easier developer access to keywords and meta information. It's really going to help a search engine to find and correctly categorize and classify your application so customers can find you. Let's dive into each of these areas in more detail. First, URL routing. You may be used to URLs like this example at the top here, /products.aspx, ? something equals some number. That's a pretty standard way of creating URLs and having URLs in a web application. If we use URL routing within WebForms 4, you can have URLs that look more like this. Your site/products/software/Halo 3. And what this will do is it's going to make it easier for customers of your site to take a look and know what they're getting directed to. So pretty good idea here. I'm going to be seeing the Halo 3 software product. And what's nice about that, it's good for bookmarks, it's good for people to share links, it's good for people to help navigate your site as well. And it's also usually the case where if something is friendly for a user, it's also helpful for a search engine to help categorize more effectively. It's easier for it to look at Halo 3 on the URL and say, this is probably going to deal with Halo 3, rather than category ID equals 12 and have to figure out what that 12 means. So we can write code, as you see at the bottom of the screen here. You would actually set up some one or more routes within your application to say, if a URL looks like the following format, so that line of code that you see midway there in register routes, where it says products/category/name, that's defining really the look of the URL you're trying to match. So if I have a URL that looks like that, it says, let's use this route, let's send the request to the products.aspx page without making it really obvious to the user that that's what's happening. And then we'll also take the category and the name part of that URL and pass that along as parameters to the page itself. And you can also add things like constraints and defaults to the page as well to help the route determine what to do. Now, in the page itself, we have access to those values. So I can have access to the category and the name right here from the route data, and write in code there. So you can use that to perform the logic of the page directly pulling from that root. And also, you can use this declaratively. So within an example here, a SQL data source as a control can just tie into the root keys for that page and pull out the category and the name and use them directly in the creation and the execution of those SQL calls. ASP.NET 4 will offer Web Forms developers an easier way to work with and set keywords, descriptions, and other meta information for web pages in a couple of ways. You can use a declarative approach. You can see at the top of that code example, there's a page directive with title, description, and keywords attributes that you can set. Great for setting it in a more of a static way. If you want more of a dynamic approach, you can use a programmatic imperative approach. And so at the bottom here, we have page load that is using this.title, meta description, and meta keywords to set those values really on the fly as the page is being generated. In this case, in fact, if you look closely, you'll see it's using the root data that I had just talked about in the prior example. And so view state, is it a hero or is it a villain? Well, it really depends on what you're looking to do. It's always trying to be a hero for you. It's trying to be helpful. So ViewState exists to help the server figure out what's going on between each request. ViewState contains the state of controls and other information for the page that the server can then parse apart to find out, for example, if the contents of a text box changed, and in which case it could fire an event. Or if it's trying to regenerate the page to send back down again, if it already has data in view state, it won't need to go and recalculate that or pull it again from another source. It can just reuse that data. However, if you don't need that functionality, it can be a bit of a villain to use view state or to leave it enabled, because it's going to add extra data, extra contents to the page that's being sent down from the server and back up again with each page request or page postback. So you want to optimize that to only use it when you need it. So how can we do that? In ASP.NET 3.5, you could do something like this. You can go into your configuration and say, for all pages, enable view state is false. That's a bit heavy, though. You are going to find that's problematic, because if you turn it off here, you can no longer turn it on at the page level. Once it's set off in the configuration, you can't turn it on at the page level, nor could you set it on at the control level like this for a particular grid view that you know you need view state for. Even though you set view state off everywhere else to be nice and optimized, you cannot turn it on at this level. So it's obvious that we need more flexibility. It would be helpful to have that, and that's what's offered in ASP.NET 4. With the view state mode property, you can now set at the control level or the page level whether you want to enable, disable, or inherit the value of whether view state is turned on or not. So this allows you to be very granular about how you configure the view state. And so I can turn it off at the page level, but on the control level. Or I can just say, I'll inherit these settings. And I'll say, whatever the page decided, or whatever my parent control has decided, I'll go ahead and use as a setting. And again, if it's turned on or off at one level, it doesn't mean you cannot turn it the other direction at a lower level. Very helpful for you to create an optimized page in terms of performance, but also that takes advantage of the power of view state when you need to. So if you recall from the very first demonstration, I showed you the source of the page and also pointed out view state. I also showed a client ID that was generated by ASP.NET for the components of that grid, the product grid. Now those names can become fairly lengthy as the complexity of your page grows, and so it becomes an increasing challenge to write client code that knows what those names will be as your page changes and grows. So there is a workaround. You could use an escape out to server-side code and write out the client ID from a property of the control, but there are limitations of that, and there need to be better ways. There are better ways that are coming with ASP.NET 4. In particular, each control now has a property called client ID mode, where you can be very specific. You can say, here is the naming approach that I wish to have used by ASP.NET when it creates these controls for me automatically. And you can inherit these settings. You can use a static naming convention. You can use the one from ASP.NET 3.5, or you can use it based on like naming containers with a suffix that you provide yourself if you wish. There's some flexibility built in now to ASP.NET 4, so that's going to help you as you're writing more complex structures in the client side using JavaScript or jQuery or CSS to select different components and controls on the client side. And so to finish, I encourage you to check out the following sites. Go to ASP.NET to learn more about what I covered today. There's videos and documentation and samples to help you get up to speed on those areas. Also, /Ajax of that site will let you download the ASP.NET Ajax library. And I didn't have much time to cover what's coming with ASP.NET 4, but for more in-depth sessions, check out MicrosoftPDC.com. You don't need to have been registered or an attendee of PDC to get these. They're freely available full recordings of the content from PDC, and several of which were focused on ASP.NET 4. Definitely recommend you check that out as well. So thanks very much for joining the screencast. If you have any questions or follow-up, just send me a note at cbowen@microsoft.com. Thanks again.